You're listening to the C to Z of Movies. My name's Colin on the C. Joining me is Zijan the Z. Hello, Zijan.
Hello. I forgot to tell you the last time, but I passed my driving test.
Oh, wow. Oh, well done, man.
Yes. Well, I passed my UK driving test because I can really drive in Malaysia, but yes, I can now drive in the UK as well.
And famously, it's the same side of the road, so you didn't have to learn a whole new set of...
Exactly.
Is it mostly manual cars in Malaysia, or is it automatic?
Mostly automatic. Okay. So I did my lessons here in automatic. So if I ever need to drive manual, I mean, I can still fall back to my Malaysian license.
Okay. No one's driving manual anymore anyway.
Who does, right? Why? So much effort. Come on.
If a car's offering to do something for you, let it, I say.
Exactly, right? So one of my colleagues was telling him about that. I was doing only automatic. I was like, no, that's not real driving. I'm like, I mean, if it gets me from A to B, yeah, that's driving. That's real driving for me, man. Come on.
How is that not real? That's mad. Were you doing that in London?
Yes.
I mean, I've been driving it for 10 years. I've never driven in London. Sounds like a nightmare.
Well, you can come down when you come for your Taylor Swift concert.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, you're not central London, so it's not too scary, I suppose.
No, it's not too bad. Well, but I did my test in a route I've not been before because I only realized I got a test center wrong 2 days before the exam. So I was like, okay.
It's a little bit nerve-wracking. All right.
Yeah, let's just do it then. So... yep, that's how I passed my driving test, guys. Don't do it that way. Probably not advisable.
It's me. Speaking of cars, our quiz today is on Pixar host cars.
Yes.
I'll save my complaints till then. Our main topic is movie beginning with the letter K, the top 10 thereof. Let's see if Killers of the Flower Moon makes it in. We're also, what else are we doing? We're talking about the films of Caitlin Dever, speaking of the letter K. And much more. But we start, as we always do, Zijan, with movie news. What have you got?
Delays. Obviously, the writer's strike was going to have an effect, and no one knew how bad the effect was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
But now we are aware of some of them. So, for example, Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning Part 2, is now not going to be... next year anymore.
No, it's not. It's very sad, isn't it?
Yeah, it's moved from next summer to the summer after that, from the 28th of June 2024 to 23rd of May 2025, which is quite a big shift.
And it was, yeah, I mean, it was always maybe a slight ambitious to get them a year apart. These days, whenever you get an announcement of films that are a year apart, or a sequel a year after the previous one, I was like, really? It's like Spider-Verse. It's like, that was never going to happen even before this strike.
They should have filmed it back to back like Lord of the Rings did.
Yeah, that's true. Those were 1 year apart, weren't they? Those were the days. I've heard rumors also they're going to change the title so it's no longer a part two, it's something else. which I think it's fair to say Dead Reckoning Part 1 didn't do as well as they were hoping, partly because of the whole thing about IMAX screens. Then you got a weak IMAX before Oppenheimer took over. Kept audiences away to a certain extent. But yeah, if you didn't really want to lump a part two onto the name if the first one didn't do brilliantly.
I don't think it's as good as the previous two films either, so yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it was as good as Fallout. But it's still very good, I thought. I don't know what DVD count today, mine has not yet arrived. So what was the point of pre-ordering it if it's going to arrive after I could have bought it anyway?
Not only that, Deadpool 3 has been pushed back as well, but who knows when. It's supposed to come next May, which is very optimistic given that they're only halfway through shooting. So, it's not going to happen either. So, next year, it's a good thing we're not doing a podcast next year then, because there won't be any movies to watch.
There'll just be a lot of going through the alphabet and doing our top 10s. Oh, well. But yeah, Deadpool 3, I think I said last time, is the film I'm most looking forward to. So I guess I'll be looking forward for a bit longer. It's a real shame. Speaking of strikes, this is not maybe the biggest news, but I found it interesting that Paddington in Peru is coming. That's got a date now. Is it November?
Yep, November 8th.
A year to the day from the release of this podcast. But... Rachel Zegler won't be in it. And that's because she's in SAG-AFTRA and everyone else is in, I guess, Equity. But a UK union, they're not in the same union. So she's been replaced by someone called Carlo Tu, or Tus. He's a newcomer. Playing Gina Cabot, or Cabot, who is not a character I'm familiar with. I don't know the Paddington lore, but I suspect she's probably a new character.
Mm-hmm.
But, this will be the only film next year that doesn't feature Rachel Zegler, I think. She's
she's in everything.
Are you going to go watch the Hunger Games prequel?
No.
I think I will. It looks all right.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
I enjoyed the first of the four Hunger Games films.
Yeah. Yeah. So 25%. So this could...
The only one that wasn't directed by this guy. I don't know. I thought it looked pretty good. And at least the lead wants to be in it. Unlike Jennifer Lawrence, who clearly didn't want to be there for the last few.
That's fair. We've got more casting news and lots of other casting news now, I think, since the strikes had a deal, I think. So Mike Flanagan, for those who do not know, he's famous for the Netflix horror series. The Haunting of Hill House is still really good, Colin. I think you should watch it even though you hate horror.
Okay.
It's really, really good. He is making a film called The Life of Chuck, which is based off a Stephen King anthology. And there I go, thinking that no one's doing Stephen King again. Everyone's still doing it.
Mike Flanagan is single-handedly. Didn't he do Dr. Sleep? Was that him?
The
Shining sequel.
So. No, not that I'm aware of. But so originally we had Tom Hiddleston and Mark Hamill starring in it. And they're still going to be in it. But now we have Chiwetel Ejiofor, Karen Gillan, and Jacob Tremblay joining it as well.
Tijan, never doubt me. Never doubt me. Dr. Sleep was written and directed by Mike Flanagan.
Oh, there.
I'm going to take a bonus point in the quiz for that.
You're already winning in this.
I'm not sure I'm going to be watching The Life of Chuck. I was trying to work out if Chiwetel Ejiofor and Karen Gillan have been in a film together before. I feel like they have, but would they have overlapped any Marvel stuff? Probably not. Because he's Mordo, isn't he? But I don't think he'd been in anything that Mordo's been in.
No.
Nebula and Mordo have been together. Anyway, and Jacob Tremblay, best known for Room, of course.
Yes.
Among various other things. I like Tom Hiddleston and Mark Hamill as a pair. I think that's fun.
So you'll watch it then?
No.
I mean, not all Stephen King's stories are about horror, right?
It's true. I've watched a few Stephen King films, obviously Shawshank being the most obvious one.
Yep.
But it is about horror, isn't it?
Yeah, it is about horror.
Every now and again, I think I will watch. I was thinking maybe I'll watch Scream. I like Neve Campbell. Maybe I'll watch Scream, and then I decided not to. It's life affirming, genre bending drama, fantasy, sci fi. Maybe I will watch it.
Yeah.
It's got Carl Lumbly in it. He was in the Alias TV series.
It's a good cast, Colin. It's a good cast.
It's got David Dasmalkin in it. He's good. It is a good cast. It's got Matthew Lillard. Maybe I will watch this, but our listeners will never know. Did you see the film Fall?
I have seen Fall.
Yeah, so we talked previously about how it's going to get a sequel. Turns out they've already greenlit two sequels to it, presumably called Winter and Spring. Little joke for our American listeners there, Zijan.
I mean, that's quite clever, though.
I wasn't even prepared. You can check my notes. That's just solid improv. That is. I enjoyed Four a lot. I was one of the relatively few people who saw it in the cinema over here because I had a free evening. I thought, let's see what was on. I think I talked about it in DC and Dr. Z. I don't know quite how this is going to work. They've got no details. I don't think it lends itself to a sequel.
I mean, they say it's a sequel, but I'm pretty sure it's a standalone film, right? Come on. There's no way she will climb up another radio tower again.
Yeah, she's definitely climbing up something, isn't she?
Why?
I'm assuming she'll be in it. I know they've definitely said there'll be a returning cast, so it's not kind of like a searching kind of sequel
maybe
thing.
Maybe the Wild Chill will be back.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe the dead girl will be back.
Yeah. Spoiler alert.
Yeah, spoilers for Fall. She's got to be climbing something. But how do you go bigger than that? You can't just climb something taller.
But it just makes no sense, right? Surely she must have loads of PTSD from the first film.
what will happen is she'll just be on the top floor of a building and then the entire building will fall away.
It just makes no sense. In the first film, she's climbing a radio tower because she's trying to get over the PTSD of her fiancé falling off something.
Yeah. So now she's got even more PTSD to get over.
Oh my goodness.
I'm not a doctor, but I think if she just keeps climbing taller and taller things, then eventually she'll get over it.
Maybe she should just eat a tub of chocolate ice cream.
I mean, that could do it as well, yeah. I've seen the film Skyscraper. He didn't mean to be in a skyscraper, but he had to be. Maybe she'll be in a similar situation where she's got to rescue her friend or something. And then again, one more time.
Speaking of survival trailers, there are quite a few coming up, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Idris Elba is directing one. He's co-directing one, actually. Mm. An astronaut survival trailer called Above the Below.
Yeah. I thought the astronaut survivor thriller had been done to death with Gravity and The Martian, which are both great films, but I guess we need more.
Well, it's quite different
and,
because...
And Apollo 13.
Yeah, it's quite different because they veer off course when coming back into Earth. And now they're stuck in the middle of the ocean. That's why it's different. So their survival only began when they're in the ocean.
It sounds like it's low budget.
Well.
Tell you what, Zijan, if you want to watch a survivor film based about someone stranded in the ocean, I've got a recommendation for you.
Yes, go on.
It's called Castaway. It stars Tom Hanks. I think you'll love it.
I've seen Life of Pi. It's the same thing. Yeah, it's a tiger and it's a volleyball. Same thing.
Are you saying a tiger is the same as a volleyball? Is that what you're saying?
They form meaningful relationships with them. So in that context, yes.
Okay. The Olympics would be a lot more exciting if they threw a tiger in. Fine. Yeah, okay. It's still apparently a director's stuff before. I don't think I've seen any of it.
No. I've got also another survival trailer starring Vanessa Kirby and Sydney Sweeney that's coming up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and this is going to be directed by Ron Howard.
He's not done anything for a while, is he?
Mm-hmm. So this survival trailer is called Eden.
Okay.
And it already has Jude Law, Ana de Armas, and Daniel Brühl on the film again as well.
Good cast.
So again, good cast, yeah. And this survival trailer, where is it going to be set, Colin?
Is it going to be set in the Garden of Eden? Because that's not too many cast members for a start. It's going to be set in the beautiful city of Wolverhampton.
So they're trying to survive Wolverhampton.
I don't know, the desert. A rainforest.
So the
Amazon rainforest, final answer.
It's on a remote island in the Galapagos, yeah.
If you want to see a film about someone stranded on a remote island, I've got a recommendation for you.
Yes, Colin, what is it?
It's Castaway.
Have you seen the film The Island?
Is that the one with Ewan McGregor? Yeah, I have, yeah. It's not the same thing. Apparently Ron Howard's directed two films last year, but nothing this year. Okay. Saoirse Ronan is back. Not that she ever went away. She's playing a teacher of a unruly pupil, among others, in a satire called Bad Apples, which I think is based on a Norwegian film, maybe?
Swedish,
sorry to our Scandinavian friends. And she accidentally locks the pupil in her house.
Somehow.
Saoirse Ronan's always worth watching, and this sounds like it could be intriguing.
Hmm.
My first thought was she's too young to play a teacher, but I guess she's probably like 30. So.
Yeah, she is, right? I mean, we are quite old, Colin.
Yeah. and in fact, when this podcast goes out,
yes,
we'll be the same age.
Hey!
But as we record, Zijan, as we record, I'm still youthful.
No one cares.
my friend Ed, who I think listens to the podcast sometimes, maybe always, who knows, is also your age, Zijan, and messaged me to let me know that my hair will turn grey when I hit 38. But I'm not sure I've got enough hair left to tell, so it's fine.
Yeah, I was going to say white hair, but it's okay, Colin. You're growing old gracefully.
That's what I'm doing.
You know the horror film It Follows?
Yes.
There's going to be a sequel.
It Follows, It Follows?
Yes. It Follows, It Follows.
It's called They Follow, isn't it?
It is called They Follow. And the original actress, Maika Monroe, who made is going to return for that. I've seen parts of It Follows. It's not bad. It's gotten very good reviews as well from the critics when it first came out. So I think, I think people are looking forward to watching They Follow, even though I won't be watching it.
Probably. I will also not be watching it, but good luck to them. It's nice to have a new horror franchise that I won't watch.
Yeah.
Do you want to hear some rumors about the MCU?
Okay, go on.
Some of these are more substantiated than others, but there was a Variety article this week basically detailing some of the shambles, I guess, that the MCU is in now, or some of the crisis. I think it's called MCU in Crisis or Marvel in Crisis.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
And some of these are less reactable. Some are just hovering around Twitter, I guess. But as well, have a bit of chew over. So the first one, which I think it comes as no surprise, is that the head honchos at Marvel are considering getting rid of Kang and moving to maybe Doctor Doom instead.
Yes, I heard
that. Because we don't delve into too much of stuff with Jonathan Majors, but he's been accused of various things, and that's not a good look for Marvel. Do you think they can just, leaving aside the kind of behind the scenes stuff, just looking at it from character point of view, can you just get rid of Kang and say Doctor Doom is doing it all along? What do you reckon?
I mean, I'm not sure. I think people are just tired of Marvel or superhero films in general now anyway. So I don't think it really matters. Does it matter anymore? Do you care?
I do care. I get what you're saying, that there is this superhero fatigue, but I think that it's partly the fatigue of having too many of these, but I think really it's fatigue of having too many mediocre ones.
Yeah.
Because when you get a Deadpool 3, I don't know if it's going to be good or not, but I think they'll get a lot of people in because people are looking forward to that and it sounds exciting and it's got a proven track record. I can understand why people aren't excited by the Marvels, even though that was one of the ones I was looking forward to before you kind of hear about some of the behind the scenes stuff. But I think people will be excited by something that you see. You bring in the old X-Men, you bring in the old Spider-Men, you bring in the old Fantastic Four, all these kind of things that we're kind of building up to. I think that'll get audiences in, but maybe not if it's a big Jonathan Majors thing.
Yeah, that's the thing. You are watching Loki still, right? Is he there?
Yeah, you're not watching it?
No. I watched the first episode, I got bored.
Oh, I think it's really good. Yeah,
the fifth episode is amazing.
I've enjoyed all of them, to be honest. But yeah, he's in it a fair bit.
Is he? Huh.
And I think, yeah, if they're going to switch to a Doctor Doom or whoever, they're going to have to do it quickly because they can just about still get away with it, I think. Because, yeah, we've had Kang in Ant-Man that you can easily just say, well, that's just one guy.
Well, we've had a whole lot of Kangs in Ant-Man.
Yes, but only in the post-credits. I think you can shrug it off, can't you? but Doctor Doom isn't there's loads of him kind of guy, is he?
He has a lot of Doombots.
Okay.
Yeah,
I think they either need to eject now or just keep going. But you can't do another year or two and then say, well, actually, we're going to completely change course. So speaking of Marvels, the other one is apparently there's been extensive reshoots to the Marvels, but the director, Neil DaCosta, wasn't actually involved for the last month of them.
Oh, really?
We already know it's the shortest MCU film maybe ever, or maybe since Hulk. Not sure. Usually when they're doing test screenings, they only do it for Disney friends and family, but they did do test audience screenings outside of that, and it's got fairly middling reviews, it seems. So.
Oh, wow. Oh, no.
Yeah, this isn't going to be the one to turn things around, I don't think.
The trailer looked really good, though, which is... The
trailer was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the first Captain Marvel I thought was really good. So, it's one that, I mean, Captain Marvel made $1 billion, but Ms. Marvel wasn't great, and I don't think the people are that excited to see the third one, whose name now escapes me, Monica Rambeau, was it?
Yeah, Monica Rambeau.
We'll see, but I think it's coming in at something like 1 hour 40, which is really short for a Marvel film, for any film like this.
Well, we'll let you know next podcast anyway.
Yeah, I guess we will. Thor 5 apparently will be happening. Without Taika Waititi, unsurprisingly, after the Thor didn't really love Thor Love and Thunder. I know we weren't huge fans. Where do you think they'll go with Thor next? Do you think they'll keep it silly, or they'll go a bit more like the first couple?
I mean, he literally has a child now.
Hmm.
It comes to a certain point, right? Like, I get it, you want to show that, you know, these guys have families and all that, but seriously, you know, you can't really be a superhero when you have a family.
Ooh, but that's The Incredibles. I think it's interesting because I think you can do it with a kid, particularly if you, there's a few years to go, so the kid's 18 or something by the time they do it.
Oh, it's the actual child of the actual actor.
Yeah, I don't know how old she is now, but if you wait till she's a few years old, like a Cassie Lang type thing, you can just make that work. But what I find is intriguing is I really liked the first Thor, and he was kind of this cod Shakespeare, quite, I mean, there were jokes, but he was quite serious in that respect. Then he became this really silly, wacky character, which worked for Ragnarok, but I think at very time I hated it in Endgame. But can you just change gears again? I don't know.
No idea.
One of the wilder rumors is that they're going to bring back the original Avengers again.
Yes, I heard that as well.
Do you reckon they will?
One of them, right?
Well, there's Robert Downey Jr., Scarlett Johansson have been rumored.
Did?
Yeah, but multiverse.
Yeah, that's true.
To be honest, I'd be amazed if they don't bring Robert Downey Jr. back for a cameo at least, but I don't think you're going to get another Avengers film in the original cast.
Basically, what you're saying is that Marvel is struggling right now.
It is. And it's had a great run. But I think the general consensus is they went way into overdrive, put out way too much content. So we don't talk too much about TV series on here. But I think there have been some great TV series from Marvel, but there's been a lot of duds as well. And they've went from doing 3 films a year to doing 3 films a year plus 4 TV series a year, and that's just way too much to manage.
Yeah, so, and for Marvel to expect everyone to know everything about the Marvel Universe is going to be impossible. Who has the time to watch everything?
I mean, the fact that even you haven't been watching Loki.
Yeah, exactly.
It speaks for itself. I'm still on top of everything, but I do think, pulling back a bit, spending time getting things right. So they've basically not cancelled, they've scrapped all the Daredevil stuff they've filmed so far to make it to start from scratch, and I think that's probably a good idea if they actually want to make it work. Apparently, the last of the rumours, and this was in the Variety article, and the Blade script, so Blade, who knows when that's going to come, that's been going through lots of iterations, and I had a script at one point that basically Blade was the fourth lead, and it was just a female-led movie in which he was barely in it. You think, what? When you've got Mahershala Ali, like 2-time Oscar winner as the lead character, why on earth would you do that? So they scrapped that, and that seems to be fairly early stages again. So are we going to see that in the next 5 years? I don't know.
Who knows?
I think they can pull out of this. I think they can make this work. And when Avengers Endgame, not Endgame, Avengers, whatever they call it, Avengers 5 and 6, when they come, I'll still be excited to see it. And I'm one of the few people, I guess, who's not tired of the multiverse yet. But I just need to put a bit more quality control in. I'll do for Marvel rumors. You got any more news?
Well, my last bit of news is that a short one, but the BAFTA nominations out. So that's the British Independent Film Awards out. And Rye Lynn, the film that we both saw earlier this year and we both loved, is leading nominations there with 16, I believe.
Yeah, that's great news. Great news. Really great film. I've only watched it once. I've been meaning to watch it again because it's on Disney Plus. In fact, only yesterday I was recommending it to a friend from work.
Yeah, it's really, really good. I mean, they don't do rom-coms very well, but this is really good.
Yeah. Yeah, if you haven't seen Rye Lane yet, it's on Disney Plus. Check it out. We move on then to See or Not to Zed, where we talk about films we've recently seen and tell you, the listeners, should you see them or not Zed them. Zijan, what have you been watching?
So I saw the film Dear Evan Hansen.
I thought you'd already seen that.
Maybe I've judged it. But I've seen clips on it on YouTube.
Okay.
But now I've seen it properly, even though I know it's bad. Okay. You know why I watch this, Colin?
Is it because you ran out of content for the podcast?
No. Yes, and because Caitlin Dever's in it.
Ah, is she? Okay.
Yes. So... I'm not sure how much you know about this, but I may have talked about this in previous podcasts before. This is a musical. It's a musical film. The musical is really, really big in the States. I actually saw it in New York when it first came out. And Ben Platt, who plays the main guy, Evan Hansen, in the musical, is also starring as him in this movie.
Mm.
Which is part of where the controversy is. So, let me tell you about this film. I'm not sure how much you know about this, Colin, or the musical, or heard of it.
Yeah, I know a bit.
Yeah, it's a great cast. You have Julianne Moore and Amy Adams as well in this. So, great cast. So, the way the film markets itself is with one of its songs called You Will Be Found, which is a very good song. It's written by Pasek and Paul, who did all the music for La La Land. Yep, and The Greatest Showman. So You Will Be Found is a very good message, isn't it? Like, you know, it's telling teenagers especially that, you know, someone will understand you, you know.
Okay.
That's a very great message. Now, let me put the context behind when this song is sung in this musical. And then you can tell me whether the context makes this messaging very, very flawed. So in this movie, Ben Platt plays Evan Hansen, who's a teenager, who basically weasels his way into a family whose son died of suicide by lying to the family that he was best friends with the son. The family, of course, was trying to latch on to any hope that they know about their son, about anything on their son. So we became very good friends with Evan Hansen. He also eventually had a relationship with this dead son's sister.
All right.
So this song, You Will Be Found, was sung at a school assembly. He was singing to all the kids through social media, saying that it's okay to feel misunderstood.
Okay.
Etc. Even though he kind of lied his way into the family. So, yes.
Okay.
Yes. So, I mean, the film depicts it, and the musical does depict it, like, Evan Hansen does have some issues socially. He doesn't really get along well with people. He does have a lot of anxiety and all that. But, yeah, the plot is one of the main things I do not really like the musical or the film itself.
Okay.
Because of this alone. Like, I do not like a whole film, a whole premise being built off on a lie. Which is, yeah, I just don't like it.
Doesn't he learn a valuable lesson or something?
I guess in the end, he felt sorry about it.
There you go. Okay, so I knew basically all of that, I think. I've not seen it either on... I've never been to New York, CJ, and I don't move in those exciting circles, but I haven't seen it on stage or on Netflix.
It was in on the West End for a bit as well, actually.
Oh, right. Well, I missed it. Should I watch it on Netflix?
No.
Okay.
The songs are quite good, though, if you ignore the context behind it.
Fair enough. I watched a film called Pain Hustlers, which is on Netflix. It's a Netflix original. It stars Emily Blunt and Chris Evans. It's about the opioid crisis, which there have been a few things about recently. I've also started watching Dope Sick on Disney Plus, which has got good reviews. And, in fact, stars Caitlin Dever, speaking of. This is... like that, based on a true story. The opioid crisis isn't really a thing in this country, but certainly in the USA and in Canada, in fact, from what I saw over there as well. But a lot of people being prescribed opiates, being told they weren't addictive, and it turns out they are incredibly addictive. And this is told through the lens of Emily Blunt's character, who is a single mother who's basically, I mean, she's working in a strip club. She's got no money. She's having to live with her sister. But she gets a job selling these drugs to doctors and makes huge amounts of money. Chris Evans is the boss of he's one of the employees at the company who takes her on.
I actually saw the first 10 minutes of this film.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. And then I stopped because I thought Emily Blunt is too pretty to play this.
I wasn't objecting. It's a slightly odd tone because at times it's kind of like, hey, isn't everything really exciting and isn't this all wacky? It feels a bit like in some ways The Big Short, where you've got kind of imaginative scenes and it's not just straight narrative, but a lot of the time it is a straight narrative. And you also have Emily Blunt, who I think is really good in this film, actually, getting horrified by what she's doing and what she's seeing. And so you do kind of see almost her against Chris Evans' character, who is less worried about the ethics of it all and various others involved. I think the tone doesn't quite land because you do have that slight mismatch where it's not really clear. It's not a kind of Aaron Brockovich type, someone standing up to horrible things. It's not a Goodfellas type, okay, this is bad, but isn't it cool? It's somewhere between those, I guess. But yeah, I say Emily Blunt, I think, is really good in it. Chris Evans feels a little bit miscast, not so good. I think it's worth a watch, but I'm only one episode into Dopesick, but I think Dopesick is going to be altogether better, and certainly from what I've heard, it's a much more challenging and more interesting look at the opioid crisis. So, yeah, it's not a bad film by any means. And in fact, yeah, about an hour in, I thought, oh, this could be really good. But it doesn't quite land it, I think.
Okay. Now, it's a good day. I only watched 10 minutes of it then.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you get to the end, I don't think you'll regret it. I just don't think you need to watch it.
Okay.
We move on then to our main segment of the day, which is the top 10 films beginning with the letter K. Zijan.
This is going to be the worst one ever, man. I'm going to preface this now. Like, going through this list was rough. Very, very rough. I don't have 10.
Yeah, I probably could have got 15, but the bottom few were definitely not that strong. So you actually don't have 10, do you?
I have 8. Okay. I refuse to put Killers of the Flower Moon in it.
That's fair. Okay, we'll do what we always do then. A slight adjustment, I suppose, on what we always do. We will give our top 10 or top 8 and award them 1 to 10 points. I've also asked out some friends. Unsurprisingly, there haven't been as many responses as usual. K is quite a difficult letter, as it turns out. Although, as I say, I had a few good ones that I couldn't quite squeeze in.
Well, I thought J was better than K, surprisingly, for me.
It's great stuff, yeah. So number 10 for me is a film called The Kids Are All Right. It's one of Mark Ruffalo's Oscar nominations. It's not one of my favorite of his roles, but there's a lesbian couple. He is the sperm donor to one of their children, who wants to seek him out, and he sees the impact of his kind of boho lifestyle when he interacts with this family. I'm trying to Julianne Moore and Annette Bening, I think.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yep, that's right.
And yeah, it's a typically strong performance from him. It's good enough to get number 10 in my playlist. Number 9 for me is a film I've only seen once. I should see it again. But I had a great, surprisingly great time watching it. I wasn't expecting to like it very much. It's a film called A Knight's Tale, which you'll be familiar with. Heath Ledger and one of the earlier films of Paul Bettany, I think. Does Paul Bettany play Chaucer, maybe?
I always confuse that and Night and Day.
All right. Night and Day, even though it stars Tom Cruise, did not make my list. So Night's Tale is a telling of a knight who does jousting and what have you, but it's kind of, if I remember rightly, you kind of get some slight anachronisms where people are singing along to like Nirvana or something. But it's a lot of fun. Do you want to hit us with your number 8?
I have The King's Speech, my number 8.
Excellent.
The Tom Hooper film. The one where Colin Firth played King George the VI, I believe.
Yeah, that sounds believable.
I mean, don't you know yet, you Mr. Royalist? You?
6 too many, if you ask me.
it's King George the VI. Who is trying to get his stammer cured by... I think an Australian linguist.
Lionel Logue, yeah.
Yeah, played by Geoffrey Rush. So, I don't agree that this deserved to win Best Picture of the year.
Okay.
I think you and I both agree that The Social Network was...
Yeah, that's better.
I think,
was that the same year?
Yeah, yes.
All right. It wasn't Inception that year as well.
Yes, as well.
Yeah, that's better.
Great year, Inception, yeah. 127 hours, which is also good. I like that as well. But it's still a great solid film. It's a great solid period film. I think this was done before The Crown came out.
Yeah, yeah.
And The Crown showed how much people love the royals, even though some people don't.
Colin Firth won an Oscar, of course.
Exactly, for Best Actor. So Can't be that bad.
That's a good film. Helena Bonham Carter was really good in it as well as his wife.
Yes.
I think he became the first Colin to win an Oscar. So that was certainly the first acting Colin. I don't know if there have been others in the other departments. In at eight for me is a film called Klaus, which is an animated film. It's a Christmas film. And it basically,
an animated film?
I know. Have you seen Klaus?
I've seen Klaus.
Yeah. Basically telling the origins of Father Christmas. It's really good. Really.
It is very, very good.
It's heartwarming. It's clever. It's nice. Lead character. And yeah, I think it will become a Christmas classic.
Oh, yeah, it is really good. It's good. You're going to see it up my list, really.
Okay. We're going to get back to it.
Yes. My number seven is The Karate Kid.
Which one?
Original.
Makes sense.
Of course, original. Who wants to see Little Will Smith?
Or there was another one, wasn't there?
Was there?
Hilary Swank.
Oh yeah, they did one with Hilary Swank in it. I forgot. But yeah, original with Ralph Macchio and Pat Morita, the 1984 film. Which gives us classics like Wipe On, Wipe Off.
I mean, Wax On, Wax Off.
Yeah, close enough.
I see you're a huge fan.
I love it. I mean, I watched this when I was young, though. So, okay. I mean, yeah, it's one of those films that, where I grew up watching this and like Homeward Bound and The Three Ninjas. Very good, feel-good family films, which you don't do a lot nowadays.
I only watched Karate Kids for the first time. It was whilst we were doing this podcast. It was a few years ago now, but I can't remember. Exactly when. And it's weird watching that kind of film where, yeah, Wax On, Wax Off is such a famous scene that obviously I knew the quotes, and but to actually see it in context was cool. It's not in my list, but it's one of the ones that is kind of hovering towards the lower reaches. It might have snuck in, but yeah, I think it's one of, if I watched it as a kid, it probably would have been higher in the list.
It leaves a bigger impression when you watch it as a kid, I think.
It did it make you want to do karate and crane kick people in the head and stuff?
I did taekwondo when I was younger.
Oh, okay. Before or after watching The Karate Kid?
Before, I think.
Okay.
I never know these kind of things. Like, you know, when your parents send you to all these classes, I don't know. Yeah. I don't even know whether I chose to do it or whether my parents maybe do it kind of thing either. So I did it when I was younger.
Yeah, fair enough. Next for me is The King's Speech. So back to you.
Oh, that's quick. next for me is Kramer vs. Kramer.
Great film.
Which we saw for Look Back and Oscar. This is the 1979 Best Picture winner with Dustin Hoffman and Meryl Streep. About a divorce, which I like because I don't like divorces in general.
See, just coming out in favor of divorce.
It's just that I like stories that touch on, you know, simple milestones of life. It doesn't have to be big or grand or anything like that, but just talk about people and their relationships. And I think it does it well in this film.
Yeah, I think it's a beautiful film. Dustin Hoffman in a relationship with his child is so beautifully observed, and like the way that he's really struggling at first, but they kind of build this bond. And what I really liked about it, particularly towards the end, is that there wasn't he and Meryl Streep's character, who's not in it as much as you might think from the title, but they're not kind of like hammering each other tooth and nail. They reach a kind of understanding, and they appreciate that both of them are going through a really tough time because of this. And I think divorce in film can be quite cartoonish, and it's we saw did an episode on it or not, but Marriage Story a few years ago felt like very much in the same vein as that. So it's no surprise you learn that it's also featuring in my list a bit higher up. It's also where I learned how to make French toast. So,
really?
Thank you, Kramer vs. Kramer, for that.
Well done.
Next for me is the film Kes, which is a 1969 Kes. Film. Kes. Do you know Kes?
No, not heard of it.
It's directed by Ken Loach. It's quite early Ken Loach, I think. It's about a boy who finds a kestrel. He's called Billy. He's kind of working class. His brother beats him up a lot. He's very taciturn family. He's kind of quite a troubled kid, but he forms this relationship with this Kestrel and trains enough and has a great time. And there's quite a famous scene where he's playing football in school and the PE teacher is basically a bully who wants to make himself the star of the football game. So, yeah. It's a very beautifully observed film, and I think doesn't shy away from kind of some of the harsh realities in that world. It's interesting in that it was dubbed over in part for the American release because they thought that the accents would be too strong for people to the Yorkshire accent would be too strong for people to understand. David Bradley played the lead, who I thought for a while was the same David Bradley who went on to do things like playing Filch in Harry Potter, but it turns out completely different person called David Bradley. So,
okay.
But he wasn't an actor before. I think Ken Loach wanted a very kind of, I guess, unmannered performance. So just went, I don't know how he found him, but presumably just came in and was like, yes, I want someone who can actually play a Yorkshire kid, believably.
My next film is Klaus, so back to you.
Oh, there we go. We might see quite a lot of overlapping here. Next for me is a film called The Kid, which is a Disney film, Zijan. I don't know if you've seen The Kid.
Like The Sundance Kid?
No.
like Billy the Kid?
No.
what kid is this?
It's just called The Kid. Bruce Willis plays... Oh, what does he play? Some sort of... someone who gives advice to people, like PR advice to people. He's dating Emily Mortimer, and suddenly a young kid turns up. It turns out to be him from his youth.
Oh, wow.
A film I originally watched because it had a cameo from the late Matthew Perry. Very sad. He and Bruce Willis were friends, so he's briefly in that. But I had a great time with it. It's a fun one. It's sometimes called Disney's The Kid. Is this the this is a rare instance of me having seen a Disney film that you haven't seen?
I know, right? It is very rare.
Bruce Willis on charming form.
Good stuff. My next film is Kung Fu Hustle.
This is
the Stephen Chow film.
If I were guessing, I would say not the last time a film that in this list is going to begin Kung Fu.
This is a film with Stephen Chow. So Stephen Chow is this Hong Kong actor who is notorious for his physical comedy. So most people know him from Shaolin Soccer, which is a very good film. I think I prefer Shaolin Soccer over Kung Fu Hustle myself. But Kung Fu Hustle is really, really funny. He's a master of physical comedy. I think he's on Netflix right now as well. It's just about this low life who discovers Kung Fu in the end. He enters this village where apparently everyone knows how to use Kung Fu with different styles, and then he wants to join this enemy gang, this ex-gang. It's quite confusing. It sounds a bit confusing the way I'm describing it, because I'm not describing it very well, but it's very, very funny. And if you like the comedy that Shaolin Soccer is, I think you should watch Kung Fu Hustle.
I've not got around to watching Shaolin Soccer yet, but one day.
It's very weird.
Next for me is Kingsman: The Secret Service, which I'm sure everyone will know what it is, based on comics. A young lad called Eggsy, played by Taron Egerton. It was his breakout role. Again, a kind of working class lad, but he gets enlisted in Kingsman, which is a bunch of spies. They all dress in beautiful suits. Colin Firth is back in this list. And it was directed by Matthew Vaughn. Really great action, like very imaginative kind of stuff we haven't seen before. Great camera angles, great, a lot of superhero, I mean, it's not superhero, but a lot of action films these days, I think, quite formulaic. And one of the complaints about Marvel action is that any Marvel fight looks like any other Marvel fight. Kingsman was a completely different thing they hadn't seen before. Great supporting cast. It's at times a little cruder than I might like. I don't agree with all of it. In fact, that put me off watching it for quite a while. Because there are some bits where I think, well, you didn't need to do that. But otherwise, yeah, a lot of fun. I didn't mind the sequel. I know everyone hates it, apart from me, but I thought it was all right.
Didn't watch the prequel, right? Do you watch the prequel?
I got about maybe a third of the way through it. I thought it was terrible. But again, people seem to like that one, so weird. And I'll definitely watch the next one when it finally gets made. Yeah, Taron Egerton's pretty good.
He introduced Taron Egerton to the role as well.
Yeah, and he's really great in that role.
My number three is Knives Out.
Mm.
The one that introduced, but Daniel Craig is in it as a private detective, Benoit Blanc.
Mm.
And finally, an original whodunit. That's probably why I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing with whodunits is like, if you read the book already, it kind of ruins the whole whodunit thing. Like I know Kenneth Branagh loves making all these Hercule Poirot, Agatha Christie's mysteries, but I kind of know the ending already, and it kind of spoils the whole fun of whodunit.
Yeah,
it's nice to see an original take of whodunit for once, and a good take as well, because you have such a good eclectic cast of characters, I would say, with Chris Evans and Jamie Lee Curtis. I'm not a big fan of the whole throwing up when she cannot tell a lie because she'll throw up thing. I think that's a little bit too far-fetched for my liking in for a whodunit kind of thing. It's just a bit weird. But everything else in this is great. So.
Yeah, I agree absolutely. I think it kind of takes the whodunit genre and then flips it a bit and then flips it back again. It kind of keeps you guessing. Yeah, really good from Daniel Craig. Anna de Armas is great. It's all around great one. I'm still not sure whether I prefer that one or Glass Onion. I think they're both great fun. Mm. And Ryan Johnson wrote and directed. Really great. It's also my number three.
Very good. My number two is Kingsman.
Okay.
There are not many films to choose from.
No, my number two is Kramer versus Kramer.
So back to you. My number one.
If I were guessing, Zijan, I would say it's Kung Fu Panda.
Yeah, I know, but it's not.
Kung Fu Panda didn't. So you could only go.
I should put Kung Fu Panda in number nine. Can I put Kung Fu Panda in number nine?
I'll put it in for number nine. Yeah, I gotta say, if you couldn't come up with more than eight, you like that film.
I do like Kung Fu Panda. I forgot about that. Actually. Okay. Yeah. My number one is Kill Bill.
Really?
Volume one.
Okay.
Which is the only Quentin Tarantino film I've ever seen.
And yet you love it.
And I've not even seen Kill Bill Volume 2.
Excellent.
It's great, eh?
Do you think
it's very weird. I don't know why I like it so much.
Do you think you will watch Kill Bill Volume 2?
I know how it ends, though. It's in the title.
Fairly, you watch Homeward Bound, you know where that ended.
Anyway. That's true. I like that it mixes a lot of genres. I think this was when I was going through I kind of like Lucy Liu phase. This was back when there weren't a lot of Asian Americans in films. Yeah, maybe this is a trend. This is why I like this kind of films.
Okay. Yeah, but by the time Volume 2 came out, you were sick and tired of Asian Americans in films. I mean,
she died in Volume 1.
Did she? Okay, I've not seen it.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. I wasn't going to see it. I wouldn't know.
But yeah, I think he mixes a lot of genres in it. At one point, there's an anime sequence, which is amazing, which is to show Lucy Liu's character. It's brutal. It's gory. But in a more comedic fashion, I would say, in terms of the gore. But I think the action sequences are wonderful. I think it's just good fun. Yeah. So yeah, I think that's my number one because it's just... It's different. When I watched it, was different for its time. It stood out, and yeah, I still think it's
okay.
Yeah, it lasted long. Yeah, it's so weird, right? I don't know why I put it on white, but it's the one.
Fair enough. So yeah. I've watched three Tarantinos, I think. Yeah, and I've enjoyed all the ones I've seen. Not that one. Number one for me is The King of Comedy, which is you know, like if someone says, "Oh, recommend me a film," and then you instantly go blank. King of Comedy is quite often the one that I recommend. It's Martin Scorsese. It stars Robert De Niro as someone who's trying to make a career as a stand-up comedian. And in order to do that, he keeps turning up at the workplace of Jerry Lewis, who was a talk show host at the time, and to try and persuade him to get him to put on the show. And eventually kidnaps him. But it's my favourite Scorsese film. I think it's a brilliant script, brilliant performance. I talked about it last time because it is... also a decent length. It's not a kind of crazy length that Scorsese often went to. It's quite different to a lot of his films. I think he's quite often associated with kind of mafia films and stuff, and it's different to that. This guy, what's his name? Rupert Pumpkin? Rupert Plumpkin? Anyway, he kind of, in his house, he's got cardboard cutouts and he goes and pretends that he's being interviewed like on a talk show. So he just wants the fame. It was quite a big calling card for the Joker film, very similar in some ways. And I think if you have seen Scorsese films and you weren't sure if you love Scorsese or whatever, I think even if, yeah, whether you do or you don't, I think you'd really enjoy this one. Have you seen this?
No, I've not. No.
I think, yeah, check it out, because it's it probably, if you've got kind of preconceived notions about one Scorsese, I think it will flip some of them. So I strongly recommend. Robert Plumpkin, Rupert Plumpkin, I'm going to look it up. Because none of the things I'm saying sound like names.
Okay.
What's he's called? He's called Rupert Pumpkin. There you go. Apparently, and don't let this put you off, the character of Electro in Amazing Spider-Man 2 was partly based on Rupert Pumpkin.
Okay.
I can't say that there was a very accurate representation, but the idea of this guy that is a kind of got a bit of a fantasy life who pretends that he's friends with famous people that is actually quite pathetic is got some crossover. Let me rattle through for you, Zijian, and for our great listeners, some of the suggestions we've had from friends. My mother has gone for Kind Hearts and Coronets, which is a film I almost put on my list, where Alec Guinness plays lots of members of a family and someone basically has to bump them all off in order to, I think, to inherit money. Probably.
Mm.
It's a good film. Simon's, my brother, has also said he likes that one.
He also recommended two Indian films, Bollywood films.
Three in the end. Poor and Sons, which I have seen on his recommendation, is pretty good. A film called, oh man, Kanam Kanam Kalayadital. I don't know what that means, and I have not looked it up. And a film called Kali, which I can't pronounce.
Fun fact as well, I've only seen two Bollywood films, actually three, but two of them begin with the letter K as well.
Yeah, I don't know much about the various languages of India, but it seems that they love the letter K. That's what I'm learning here. But they didn't make it into your list.
Nah, it's been a while since I saw them. And they're too long. They're always too long.
Oh, we don't let Simon hear you say that. My friend Nathan has gone for King Lear and specified it was the Brian Blessed version. I don't think Brian Blessed would make a good King Lear, but I've not seen it, so who knows. Kevin, who obviously has got skin in the game in the whole K thing, has said King Kong. I don't know which version. But
I assume it's original.
Yeah, I guess so. The Peter
new
Jackson
one's called
one.
Kong, wasn't it? Oh, no, there's two. There's King Kong and Kong the Skull.
Kong Skull Island Kong is good. King Kong, the Peter Jackson one, almost made it onto my list. That's pretty good. He also went for Kindergarten Cop, which I know a lot of people enjoy. I wasn't blown away by it, to be honest. We've got a vote for Kes from my friend Craig and a vote for Kes, I think, from my dad, in as much as he commented on that and put in the video of the football match, which I think was a vote. I know he likes that film, so I'll take it. Julie has gone for Khartoum, which is a film I haven't seen, but it features Olivier and Richardson, so it's a classic British stage actors. Lisa joins you in Kill Bill. She hasn't specified which volume, but I'll lump it in with yours. Roger has gone for Koyanis Katsi. I've looked up Koyanis Katsi. It doesn't sound like my kind of thing. It's a experimental non-narrative film consisting primarily of slow motion and time-lapse footage, some of it in reverse, of cities and natural landscapes across the US. It's got no words. It sounds like a painful 86 minutes to me, but Roger likes it. And indeed, the National Film Registry has preserved it, so they must like it as well. Charlie's gone for Kingdom of Heaven. Ruth has voted for The King and I. Katie has gone for The Killing, which is a Kubrick film that I've not seen, but I'm told it's good. I've not yet liked any Kubrick film, but maybe this is the one. Emma's joining you on The Karate Kid. Bob is joining you, I guess, on Kung Fu Panda. Danny is joining me on A Knight's Tale. Phil is joining both of us on Kramer versus Kramer. We've got a vote from your friend Will for Krull, a sci-fi swashbuckler film that I don't know anything about. Do you know Krull?
No, I've heard of it.
No, I don't. No, it was a box office bomb, but has been, and critical opinion has been mixed both on release and in retrospect. Oh well, he likes it. I'm looking at the cast. I don't recognize any names. There you go. And John has gone for Kickboxer, which I did not bother looking up. Sorry, John. I'm assuming it's about someone who kickboxes. Are you ready for the top 10, Zijin?
I know what the top 10 is going to be.
Well, in 10th place, yes. It's The Kid. Just from me. Then we have three films in joint 7th place, which are Chess, which has got votes from me and two audience members, The King's Speech, which you both liked, and Kung Fu Hustle, which you voted for. In 6th place, we have Klaus, which you both liked. Fifth place, The King of Comedy. I feel it would be higher if you'd seen it. Yep. Fourth place, Kill Bill. Third place is the only film that's got votes from both of us and the listeners, which was Kramer versus Kramer. But joint top, we both love both of them. It's Knives Out and Kingsman. A lot that's of good, crossover though. There. That's some good. Yeah, maybe not the strength in depth for the K's, but still some very good films in there. Mm-hmm. We move on then, Dijon, to Actor Factor.
Not a K.
The films of Caitlin Dever. Do you want to kick us off?
This is worse than the films beginning with K. I saw three films, and one of them I already spoke about in length.
Can I guess the other two?
Yes.
Can I guess the other two?
You know the other two. I've mentioned them before. In,
well, that's the thing. I'm sure you have. Because I think you've probably seen Booksmart.
Yes, I have.
Did you watch Ticket to Paradise in the end?
Nope.
No? Did you watch... No, I frequently suggested you should watch The Spectacular Now and Short Term 12. Have you watched either of those?
Nope.
Ah, why do I bother?
but I did watch one of your recommendations. I watched Rosaline.
Oh, did you? Oh, cool. Yeah. I'd forgotten that.
Yeah, so... Booksmart. I'll talk about Booksmart. Directed by Olivia Wilde. It stars Caitlin Dever and Beanie Feldstein as two graduating high school girls who set out to break rules and party on their last day of classes. It's good fun. It's, I think, Olivia Wilde's directing debut, which was quite solid. It's just a good teenage, I wouldn't say coming of age, because it only just happened in one day, I guess. Right. But it's just good fun seeing people just let their hair down and just get out to wacky stuff. So it's very fun.
I couldn't get through it. I think this is one that is too crude for me.
it's quite crude.
Yeah, I got maybe 20 minutes into it. And I was like, I just can't keep watching this. Because it's on BBC iPlayer, or at least it was when I gave it a try. That was a few months ago, probably. Or a few weeks, at least.
Rosaline is even funnier, though.
That was a great film.
Yeah, I love it. Rosaline is Juliet's cousin. Yeah. Who was in a relationship with Romeo. And this story is based about her.
Yeah, so
point of view.
So Rosaline is, I don't know if she's actually on stage in Romeo and Juliet, but she's only mentioned. It's a really fun idea, a really great performance, but got taken off Disney Plus, so you can't watch it anymore anywhere. It's literally impossible to watch that film. So
sad times.
I really like that. Ticket to Paradise. I think I talked about it in Synopsis. It's a fun kind of old school rom com. George Clooney, Julia Roberts. They're there for Caitlin Dever's. She's their daughter. They've separated. It's her wedding. I'd be surprised actually. So if you include Booksmart, which you probably shouldn't, I've seen 11 of her films, which surprised me because I didn't realize I'd seen anyone near that many. But it kept being things. Oh yeah, she wasn't there, wasn't she? I think it's fair to say Booksmart was her big break. But she had done a lot of stuff. And in fact, so yeah, I mentioned Spectacular Now and Short Term 12. I've talked about. Particularly Spectacular Now a lot, so I won't go through it all again. But those are both in the same year, and she was being talked about then as kind of the next, or one of the next big things. And it took a while before that happened, but I think she was recognised at that point. She was in Bad Teacher, apparently, which is not good. She's in a film called All Summer's End, which was on Netflix as kind of a high school romantic film, but with a kind of a darker tone to it as well. Detroit, speaking of dark tone, Detroit's really good. It's about kind of racist police in 60s, maybe? Maybe not. Apparently she was in The Front Runner. I don't remember her being in it. This is a film about Hugh Jackman as a slightly corrupt politician.
Yep.
And Beautiful Boy, apparently she's in, which is Timothy Chalamet and Steve Carell. And about Steve, so Timothy Chalamet plays the son of Steve Carell and has drug addiction. I don't remember her being in it, to be honest. Oh, and a film called Outside In, which is quite a nice layback, like a J. Duplass film, which is him and Edie Falco, which is worth seeking. I think I might have talked about that one before. So I looking for those lists. I think these are, apart from Bad Teacher, these are all good films. I think she made some good choices.
Hmm.
I mean, some of them are maybe okay rather than great, but some of them are really great. So well done, Caitlin Dever. Well done. What is your favourite of the many, many films you've seen of Caitlin Dever?
I mean, didn't you hear me say it earlier? It's obviously Dear Evan Hansen.
All right.
It's Rosaline.
Yeah, I'm going to go The Spectacular now because I love that film.
I know you do. I still should watch it.
Yeah, check it out. Simon finally got around to watching it. And he also liked it. Maybe not as much as I do, but he still liked it. Bad Teacher is the worst one I've seen. I guess yours is Dear Evan Hansen, is it?
Yes.
Fine. We move on then to... Oh, no, before we move on, next time is Look Back in Oscar. We're watching a Best Picture Oscar-winning film. It's going to be The Best Years of Our Lives, which I believe is on Amazon Prime. So this might be the kick I need to resubscribe to Amazon Prime and therefore, Zijan, watch Wheel of Time and discuss it with you.
Oh, about time.
Yep. Finally, then, it's a quiz. Zijan, let me pick a bone with you on our
Pixar. What's your complaint now?
Our Pixar post-Cars. Because the first time we did a quiz on Pixar, it was Pixar up to Cars. It was just like, what, 5, 6 films?
Yes.
This is hundreds of films.
No, it's not. And besides Colin, I was the one who came up with Netflix original films.
I knew you were going to mention that. There's like 25 films or so. I don't know.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, so on that basis, I didn't really bother learning. I thought Zijan's going to win this one anyway. So
who knows? Depends on how hard your questions are. Because I think I've gone quite fair as well. Because I know you don't watch a lot. So I tend to go a bit more lenient. So
yeah. Well, that's good. I mean, in fairness, I probably have seen most of these. And and I'm so far ahead. So.
Yeah, I don't even know why you bother.
Why don't you kick us off then, Zijan?
Yeah, easy one. Question one. It was revealed that the broccoli in Inside Out was substituted with what for Japanese audiences, as they do not consider broccoli gross in Japan?
Wasn't it like bell peppers?
What colour?
Oh, come on. Really? green?
Yeah, of course.
Green. That is the worst pepper in fairness.
They also replaced hockey with football in some countries, but they didn't do it in the UK, even though the UK obviously loves football more than hockey.
Yeah, we don't like hockey. Question one for you. The lowest 6 Pixar films on Rotten Tomatoes are The Cars Trilogy, Lightyear, and 2 films directed by Peter Sohn, S-O-H-N. What are those 2 films? The only 2 he's directed, I think, for Pixar.
Yeah, I know. These are Elemental and The Good Dinosaur.
Correct. That sounds like someone who has written this question himself. We'll find out.
I googled Peter Sohn and Wikipedia him. I was like, oh, poor guy, man.
Make better films. In fairness, I've not seen The Good Dinosaur because no one's seen The Good Dinosaur.
No one's seen it. I've seen The Good Dinosaur.
No, you haven't.
I've seen all the films, I think. I've definitely seen all the films.
Oh, did you get around to Elemental?
Yeah, I did.
You've seen Cars 3?
I have. It's actually the best of the Cars.
Is it?
Lord Trilogy. God. Yeah, it really is. Question 2. The character that Tina Fey plays in Soul is also the number of films Pixar has made before Soul. What is it?
Oh, that's a great question.
It's guessable, though.
It is guessable. Mm-hmm. I have seen Soul as well, so you'd think I would know. I don't remember anyone having a number, but maybe all the Souls had numbers.
I chose this question because I know you watched the film before.
Nice. 19.
22. Close.
Question 2. What is the only Pixar film to be nominated for a Best Adapted Screenplay Oscar?
Well, I can ask that question as well for you then.
Okay.
Toy Story 3.
Correct.
My question is much longer because I wanted to give you a whole story.
All right. Okay.
Of all the Pixar movies that came out after Cars, 5 were nominated for a screenplay Oscar, of which only 1 was nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay. Which one was it?
It is a long one. Toy Story 3.
Do you know what the other 4 were?
No.
Let me go. Ratatouille.
Okay.
Wall-E.
Right.
Up and Inside Out, I believe.
Oh, yeah. Nice. What is the surname of Ian and Varley in the film Onward?
Lightfoot.
Very good.
It's like I've seen all these films before.
I mean, I've seen that, but I don't have a clue.
Is it question four?
Yes.
Yes. Who was the voice of Feathering Hamston in Lightyear, Stan in Finding Dory, Axel the Carney in Toy Story 4, and Fear in Inside Out?
It's probably John Ratzenberger.
No, it's Bill Hader.
Yeah, good for him. You may sense that I've given up on this one. Question four for you. Including the film Cars, how many Pixar film titles are just four letters long?
I hate this.
And they're all Cars. They're all post Cars or Cars itself.
And you don't include numbers, right?
Like so Cars 2 doesn't count. No.
Okay. Okay, there's Coco. There's Luca. There's Coco, Luca, Soul, obviously. Is that it? Three?
So Coco, including Cars.
Including Cars, so yep. Four.
Correct.
The last question for you is, in which Pixar film would you find the characters Thunderclap, Downpour, and Cold Front, all part of a gang?
I mean, that's got to be Elemental, surely.
Yeah, they're all pterodactyls. So it's a good dinosaur.
Come on. Oh, I fell for that one completely. Okay. Well, you've already won, but let's see if you can go for a full 5 out of 5.
Go on.
Apart from Billy Crystal and John Goodman, can you name me two of the Monsters University voice cast?
John Ratzenberger.
Yes, always.
Monsters University voice cast. Two more, right?
One more. Just one more.
Oh, no, I need to go for the full 5 out of 5. That is annoying me now. It's very annoying me. Oh, let's go. Bill Hader.
Yes, Bill Hader played Pranny Referee / Slug.
Yay!
5 out of 5. Good work. Which means it's 10-7 for the year with 4 more to go. You could still win it, Zijan. Not even pull level.
Don't tempt me.
Next time, we will be quizzing on the Creed movies.
The what movies?
Creed.
Oh. Huh.
Which apparently we've not done before.
Oh, okay.
And Zijan, what, I know you've already told the audience, but what is our main topic for next time?
The Marvels.
Is indeed.
From Marvel.
And we will see you then.
Bye.